Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Central College and Humanities Iowa, presenting the new podcast Mid-Americana, Stories from a Changing Midwest. New episodes from Season 1 are available at midamericana.com or wherever podcasts are found.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood, a neighborly day for a beauty. Would you be mine?
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and it is a beautiful day in the neighborhood. After starting out on WQED in Pittsburgh in 1966, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood made its national public television debut on February 19, 1968. The final new episode was taped decades later, December 1st of 2000, but the show lived on through reruns even after Rogers passed away in 2003. Now, three generations have grown up watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood or watching children's program heavily influenced by his philosophy. And in recent years, documentaries, books, and now, of course, a feature film starring Tom Hanks have given us new ways to understand the breadth and depth of the powerful work that Fred Rogers did. This hour, we're going to talk about that work, and we're going to talk about how it's touched our lives. We want to hear from you this hour. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And in a few minutes, Dan Wardell and Abby Brown, the co-hosts of IPTV's Kid Clubhouse Adventures, will be here. But I want to start today with Daniel Finney, who's a reporter for the Des Moines Register and has a strong connection with Mr. Rogers. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, neighbor.
Welcome back to the show. And Daniel, tell me about first your memories of Mr. Rogers from childhood. Were you a Mr. Rogers Neighborhood viewer?
I was. This is not to soothe the egos of my colleagues here in public television, but public television was on a lot in my house. And as a boy, and Mr. Rogers was a part of the pantheon between Sesame Street and, oh, there was a show about a bookmobile that got lost in time and the Bloodhound Gang and 3-2-1 Contact and a lot of that stuff probably had more of an educational impact on me than my early elementary school years.
I can relate. We watched really only public television shows when I was a child, and we weren't allowed to watch much TV. But for me as a kid, I mean, Mr. Rogers was kind of a warm, friendly presence. I didn't think about him as anything particularly unique or special. I think kids are allowed to totally take things like that for granted. So was there a point in your life when you started thinking more about Mr. Rogers?
It's really been in the last few years when I've talked about this on your show before. I live with anxiety and chronic depression. And one of the things that I do in behavioral therapy is look for ways to cope with my feelings. Well, Mr. Rogers was all about helping people find healthy ways to talk about their feelings. And I probably, like a lot of people, when you stop watching a long-time children's show, you, in your mind, sort of relegate that to the toys in the attic. It's sort of the thing that was in your past, and you don't think that you can learn anything more from that. But then I started to, I got one of those little calendars that you tear off a sheet a day, and they had sayings from Mr. Rogers, and almost every one of them just hit you right in the heart. You were sort of like, and then I started looking at clips on YouTube and I read biographies about Mr. Rogers. And then I started to think, this is a person who was a pioneer in trying to help people cope with their feelings, which is really the center of all mental health. And he even mentioned that when he went to Congress in 68 to get the funding for public television, and said that if he can help people find a way to deal with their feelings, then they will have done a great service for mental health. And I think I started looking at that, and then I started experimenting with it. One of the things that I tried, and I did this just on my way here to this morning, I was leaving my apartment building, and there was another person in the sort of quad of buildings who was walking out. I didn't know them. And I said to the person, "Hello, neighbor." And the person responded, "Hello." And he said, "It's a really nice morning for a Monday." And I said, it's a good feeling to be alive. And I didn't do this ironically, I promise you. But those are words that were exchanged between two human beings that could have easily not been exchanged, that could have easily, we did have been people who just passed each other, which we do, I think, enough of. So what's the harm in saying, "Hello, neighbor"? And it's opened up the world a little bit to me.
Daniel Finney's going to be with us throughout the hour, and I do want to introduce our other guests this hour, and we do want to hear from you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We want to hear about how Mr. Rogers has touched your life. Dan Wardell is here, one of the co-hosts of Iowa Public Television's Kids Clubhouse Adventures. Hello, Dan.
Good morning, Charity Nebby. Thanks for having me back.
It's wonderful to talk to you, Dan. And Abby Brown is also here, the other co-host of IPTV's Kid Clubhouse Adventures. Hello, Abby.
Good morning, Charity. So glad to be here today.
Well, thank you both for being here. And Dan, I'm going to give you the same opportunity I gave Daniel. Tell me about when you first encountered Mr. Rogers.
Well, it's a very similar story. In fact, I think probably everybody that's going to be speaking today, including you, Charity, you know, we grew up here in Iowa, and we... For me, growing up on the farm, we certainly didn't have cable. We certainly didn't have one of those big satellite dishes. But man, the wonder of Iowa public television, and Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers. And it was either this or watching like the Judd shows, right, on the other channels. And it was just this magical, fantastic place. And obviously, it's affected us because look where we're all today, you know, assembled together talking about this genius of a man, this magic man, Mr. Rogers.
Absolutely. Well, and as I said earlier, I think, you know, kids can take what they see on television for granted. That is one of the privileges of childhood. They should be able to take that for granted. Do you remember a point in your life when you started thinking about Mr. Rogers in a little bit deeper way and looking at what he did? Because I know that, you know, in your career, you've definitely studied his work.
Well, when I started actually working at IPTV, it's funny, we've got a display case in our front lobby that's got Mr. Rogers' sweater and a trolley and his sneakers You know, I think probably when I started working there, it's like, whoa, this is way bigger than us. It's way bigger than a guy in a cape. It's way better than being on TV and entertaining and educating kids. It's like this mission. It's like you see these pioneers like Mr. Rogers and the people that created Sesame Street, and you feel like, oh, this is an awesome responsibility. With great power comes great responsibility, right? You know, we've got to continue that legacy for as long as we can because of the wonderful young minds out there that need that great influence.
Abby, how about you? What are your early Mr. Rogers memories?
I was just like you, Charity. I took it completely for granted. We didn't have cable. I watched Mr. Rogers and Sesame Street every day. And it was my idea of normal. And that's like that great opportunity in childhood, right, is to establish some normals for kids. So I was really lucky that was what I was being exposed to, and that is what I considered normal. And to be very honest, I didn't really get any other opportunities as far as media comes until I went to college and had cable in my dorm room. And it was only a few short years later, I got this job at Iowa Public Television just right out of college, that I got to start thinking about him as an adult. So, yeah, it came full circle pretty quickly for me. I never thought that I would be on TV. I went to college at Iowa State to be an educator, and that's how I think of myself. So when I think of Mr. Rogers as an adult, I think of all of the great opportunities he had to establish normal and to, you know, talk to kids and find a connection through media, which is a challenge and something that, you know, even today is being looked at with a far more critical eye and an important look, because there's an opportunity there. And he took it and he paved the path. he was the pioneer in figuring out how to do that and leading the way for us and what we do today.
I'm the youngest in my family, so I didn't get to see younger siblings interact with Mr. Rogers. But I did babysit when I was an early teenager, and one of the boys that I babysat for really loved Mr. Rogers. And I remember at 12 years old watching his relationship with the show and, I mean, being a little amused by it, honestly. But he would, on IPTV back in that day, they would show it in the morning and then they would show it again in the afternoon, the same episode twice a day. And I babysat for him after school. So on the days that he really loved the show in the morning, he would insist that we watch it again in the afternoon. And I remember sitting there and just watching him be absolutely glued. And we'll talk about the role of music on the show throughout the hour, because I think that's such an interesting element of it. But the young man that I used to babysit for grew up to be a very gifted musician. And it was the musical episodes that he was really riveted by. In fact, do you guys remember the opera episodes? He would, so he would create an episode, and it was all in the neighborhood of make believe, and they sang the whole thing. And as a 12-year-old, I did not particularly enjoy these episodes, but Ben was the name of the child that I babysat. They were his favorite, so it was really fun to watch that relationship and think a little bit about that. I want to read an email before we get to the break, but we do want to hear from you this hour, your feelings about Mr. Rogers, the way that he changed your life, touched your life. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or call us 866-780-9100. This is an email from Shanna. She says, I grew up in a chaotic home and the men in my life were largely loud and brash. So I looked forward to Mr. Rogers every day on PBS because Mr. Rogers presented a different vision of manhood for me. I loved the way I felt he was talking to me. I remember hearing of his death on the NPR headlines. My boyfriend and I were together and we wept as we processed the news. As an adult, I had the great honor of living in Pittsburgh and graduating from the same seminary where he earned his degree. I loved how Pittsburgh really celebrated Fred Rogers. Every year on his birthday, March 20th, the city celebrated Sweater Day and local agencies would hold sweater and coat drives in his honor. It's been gratifying to see the world really dig into his life and legacy as of late. He was so much more than a quality children's show. He changed lives and he changed mine. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back. We'll talk more about the influence of Fred Rogers. With me this hour, Dan Wardell and Abby Brown of Iowa Public Television's Kid Clubhouse Adventures and Daniel Finney of the Des Moines Register. This is Talk of Iowa.
Could you be mine? I have always wanted to.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the influence and the impact of Fred Rogers. Of course, he was the host of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, which aired for decades on public television stations everywhere. In recent years, we've talked a lot more about Fred Rogers because of documentaries. And of course, just this weekend, the new movie starring Tom Hanks opened up, and that's making a lot of people think more about the life, the work, the philosophy of Fred Rogers. This hour, we're talking about how this man's work has touched your life. We'd love to hear from you. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, Dan Wardell and Abby Brown, who are the co-hosts of Iowa Public Television's Kid Clubhouse Adventures. Also with us, Daniel Finney of the Des Moines Register, and we're going to get to the phones and read some of these emails in just a moment. But first, I want to play the voice of Mr. Rogers. One of the things that made his show so unusual and remains unusual is the pacing of the show. It was a slow-paced show, and he wasn't afraid to be quiet on television, which is kind of a strange thing. You don't see people doing that very often. But he talked a lot in his personal life and professional life about the value of silence and wonder in people's lives. Let's listen.
A lot of people who have allowed me to have some silence, and I don't think we give that gift very much anymore. I'm very concerned that our society is much more interested in information than wonder, in noise rather than silence. How do we do that? I mean,
in our business, yours and mine, how do we encourage reflection? I trust that this book will do some of that, but oh my, this is a noisy world.
That's the voice of Fred Rogers. And Dan, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that because, you know, you and Abby are making this TV show that you need to capture the attention of the children who are watching you, and things have gotten faster and faster paced over time. It would be hard to create a show with the kind of pacing that Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood had today. But tell me what your thoughts are when you hear him talk about the value of silence.
Well, that is so absolutely true. In fact, I'm so lucky that, of course, I have Abby and the team back at IPTV, Deb Herbold and Teresa Knight and Cameron McCoy. If it were up to me, I'd go out of the gates, the race gates, and I'd for 28 minutes, I'd be like, you know, it's fast. People that know me know I'm go, 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 go. And that was one of the great lessons that we learned as we were putting the show together. And falling back to the lessons that history's taught us, like great shows like Mr. Rogers, is it's all about that pacing. And so, you know, you might have some excitement, but then you've got to bring it back down and let the kids reflect on that stuff that they've just observed and absorbed and have been a part of. And so that was definitely a learning experience. I wish we had a teacher, a professor, right? A professor, Fred Rogers, who could stand before us and teach us a class, you know. But in a way, he kind of has, right, Abby? In fact, that we've seen all these shows and we grew up with them, we've kind of absorbed them organically.
Abby, oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he wasn't afraid to take that time. And in a world where we want to take advantage, and it's tempting to take advantage of every single moment of that 28 minutes because there's so much we want to talk to kids about. There's so much production we can do. The opportunity is there for us to do it. But it's really all lost if you don't give kids the opportunity to process that. And that's, you know, something that teachers use in classrooms and parents have the opportunity to use in their conversations with their kids at home, is just that valuable gift, as he refers to it, of think time. So even, you know, if you're reading a book before you turn the page, just give them a minute to think through it. Or, you know, as adults, it's so uncomfortable. But when we're talking to kids, that silence is a little bit uncomfortable. But, you know, even face to face, to give them a little bit of time to process is so important. And so then when you take it in a broadcast situation, that silence is almost deadly, but it's the greatest gift and really the most powerful thing you can do to make sure that kids are really absorbing and taking in what we're trying to teach.
When you watch Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, of course, you are immediately struck by how he also used routine. There was this sameness to every single episode. He came in, he sang the song, he took off his blazer, he put on his sweater, he changed his shoes, and he did it pretty much the same every single day. Now, when I watch IPTV Kids Clubhouse, I also notice, Dan, that you also follow a routine when you enter and do things in a similar way to Mr. Rogers a little bit. Is that something that's intentional for you?
Well, the last time I wore a sweater was during senior pictures
in
high school.
You are okay. Much more of a cape man.
I'm a cape man, yes. And that wasn't planned, but yes, I walk through the door, say basically the same thing every time as an introduction. I take my cape off and I hang it on the coat rack, and then the show begins. And so, you know, there is that structure that I think kids enjoy, and it kind of puts bookends, like you would talk, you know, the movies kind of has bookends. We have bookends on the front and the end of the show that kind of keep it all as one contained unit.
Daniel, in watching the show, you know, I know that you have focused a lot on the words of Mr. Rogers, but when you think about how he looks right into the camera and he talks just to you, what are your reflections on that? I mean, he made every episode so personal for every single child or adult that was watching.
Well, you played that clip, I think it was from a Charlie Rose interview, after he had written a small book where in each page there is a thought, and then Mr. Rogers would leave the rest of the page blank, and the idea was behind that to think about the thought that had just been offered. And I listening to that clip and watching and talk and seeing interviews with Tom Hanks talking about trying to absorb this character and this person and recreate him. The cadence is so beautiful because he enunciated clearly. He chose his words very carefully, and he made sure that if he used a word that was new or maybe a little bit larger, that he helped the kids understand that it's okay not to know everything and we can help you understand things. I think to answer the question about silence, and the noisy words, the noisy world that Mr. Rogers talked about, I think what touches me about that, especially today, is Mr. Rogers is saying this in the late 1990s. Well, heavens, imagine how much more noise we've packed into our lives. We're all sitting here with our cell phones on the desk, and there's so much, not even information, just noise all the time. And what if we, Mr. Rogers' big thing was to remember that everyone, the worst person that you can imagine and the best person that you can imagine, was a child once too. And if we all took that pause when we had that mad that we feel and said, this person was a baby, this person was a child once too, and if we allowed ourselves that silence, not as trying to figure out what to watch next or which show should I stream for the next 6 hours.
What pithy thing you can say on Twitter.
Right. I mean, I'm guilty of that.
We all are.
but, I mean, I value silence more because of Mr. Rogers and that cadence.
I want to share some of the comments from people who are listening today. We have this comment from Katie. She said, the first time I turned on an episode of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood for my 4-year-old son, Mr. Rogers said, hello, friend. It's good to see you again. It's been a while since we spent time together. And I burst into tears. My reaction shocked me, but I did watch a lot as a child. This is a lovely comment from Marjorie. She says, I was raising my preschooler alone in the 1970s, and I found comfort in sharing time with Mr. Rogers and my little daughter. I often thought of him as my partner in parenting. We were talking about that slow pace and the speaking in the way that he always made sure that his listeners or viewers understood what he was saying. Ulpi has a different perspective on that. She said, I came to Iowa City in 1991 from Spain with a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old. Mr. Rogers was the program I watched with my children. The three of us learned English with Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. A very, very good feeling. I'm sure a lot of people had that experience. I want to go to the phones. You can join us. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Mark is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
Hi, and you have a very personal connection. You knew Fred Rogers.
Yes, I spent the 80s in Pittsburgh and was a common friend of ours was Fred's Bible teacher, William Friedel Orr, at the seminary where Fred was a pastor in training, and the invitation came to come to the studios. I was an actor at the Shakespeare Festival, and I think Fred was looking to sort of visit the neighborhood of the actors doing Shakespeare for the summer festival, and enjoyed the lunches that we shared. And Fred's unique lunch outings always included going to swim at the Athletic Association, membership at the Athletic Association. So my stories are rich with going for a swim before lunch with Fred.
Well, and I think one of the things we've been hearing a lot about, and I know everybody on the show today has seen the new movie starring Tom Hanks, but a big point of that movie is that Mr. Rogers was the same on television as he was in real life and vice versa. Was that your experience in meeting Fred Rogers, that he was just like he was on television?
Absolutely, yes. When someone describes it as magical, I kind of take exception because, I don't know, the real meaning of Fred's life was as a pastor in a seminary-trained pastorate. He chose to have his congregation be something special on television. And I see his ministry as through that prism. He was asked by, I think, the Presbyterian Church to say, no, we're not going to give you a church. Fred, you have a unique position to take your ministry to a larger audience in this new public television place. So that's what, instead of magical, I think of Fred as just a carrier of his gospel messages in a package that was totally palatable by all peoples. So magical maybe, but just a powerful empathy for the gospel. And when I sat in his office at WQED, it happened to be a day when I got the news that I lost my grandmother in South Dakota. And the woman who called or left a message about, like, bursting into tears, I don't know what that is, but when I learned that my grandmother died, and I was in his office when I got that message, he looked at me with such a kind of, like, I don't know, empathy that I surprised myself, too. I just burst into tears kind of thing, kind of like I lost my grandmother. And, you know, he more than just understood. He was just like this ball of warmth that just enveloped you and made you feel so totally human. And I didn't have any children at that time, but the years after I left Pittsburgh, he followed even the children that he didn't know, my children, and sent gifts like, you know, LPs of the neighborhood. And think how many people that crossed through Fred's life, and yet, you know, I'm living in Texas and Iowa after that, and yet he still reached out to children he didn't know by way of sending gifts and things. It's just an incredible, powerful example in my life.
So in what ways do you feel like that example influenced the choices that you've made?
Well, the very most curious thing is about the quietness. And I heard Tom Hanks speak to this about the experience of producing this recent feature film. There is a dearth of absence of quietness in our lives. And there's something about that. It could be prayerful to some, but just simple, you know, quietness is really healthy. And I've taken that as a serious lesson from Fred through the years and always revisited how his example was to me. Just take some quiet and listen. And that could be prayerful or it could be just meditative, but there's a lot of noise, and Fred was right to recognize all that noise, to cut through it for our own personal health.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for sharing your connection with us today.
Powerful. Thank you for listening.
You can join our conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's go to another call before we get to the break here. Don is on the line in Woodward. Hi, Don.
Hi, good morning. I've lived in Iowa most of my life, but I was born in Pittsburgh. So I have very, very fond recollections of Fred Rogers growing up. My father was a broadcast engineer. And many of the early black and white videotapes my dad made. So when I think of Fred Rogers, I always think of this family connection my father and he had many, many years ago.
Wow. So did your dad talk about that?
Oddly enough, no. We had to pry it out of him. He didn't. My dad was, because he was in broadcasting, he was bumping with great notables, sports figures, and all kinds of people all the time, every day. And so this is just another part of his job he did, and he never really talked. Well, we had to pry it out of him. When we wanted him to talk about Fred Rogers, we had to, like, pull it out of him. But he talked a little bit. So it was fun.
All right. Well, Don, thanks so much for sharing that with us today. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I think so many people who did encounter Fred Rogers in their lives never forgot those encounters. It's the kind of thing that makes its way into magazine articles and documentaries and all kinds of things like that. We have just about a minute left before we go to the break. And Daniel Finney, I want to talk a little bit more about the way that Mr. Rogers talked about feelings, because I know that's something that you have found really powerful. And it's not something, there haven't been a lot of men on television, particularly not in the 1960s and 70s, who were open and vulnerable like that. I mean, that's a really powerful thing to see, isn't it?
I think the things that make me the most sad about our culture today is that it feels so much like the only ways that we express ourselves and the only way that we talk about things is either in terms of fear or anger. And you see that on the news, and you see that reflected in so many places. And I think that that leads to an aggressive society.
Yeah, let's pick that up in just a moment. We're talking about the work of Fred Rogers this hour with me, Daniel Finney of the Des Moines Register, and Dan Wardell and Abby Brown, co-hosts of Iowa Public Television's Kids Clubhouse Adventures. This is Talk of Iowa.
Do you punch a bag? Do you pound some clay or some...
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Central College and Humanities Iowa, presenting the new podcast, Mid-Americana, Stories from a Changing Midwest. New episodes from Season 1 are available at midamericana.com or wherever podcasts are found.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the work, the influence, the impact of Fred Rogers. And with me, I have three people who were very influenced by the work of Fred Rogers. Dan Wardell and Abby Brown are co-hosts of Iowa Public Television's Kid Clubhouse Adventures. Daniel Finney is here. He writes for the Des Moines Register. And of course, you can join us too, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Daniel, I want to pick up a little bit of where we left off, but one of the things that I find as an observer right now, I look at how people are honoring Fred Rogers and talking about Fred Rogers and sharing his words, which I think is really beautiful. But in some ways, I see people kind of deifying Fred Rogers and saying, oh, what if only we still had Fred Rogers here, and what would he do if he were here? And I think that he made his message so very clear that we weren't supposed to ask him what to do. We were supposed to follow his example. So, I mean, I think I just read an article that Tom Juneau, the journalist who inspired the character of the journalist in this new Tom Hanks movie, he said, you know, we know what he would have said. We know how he would have responded because he was so incredibly consistent in his responses. And it's not just that we need to look to his words and to him, but that he empowered all of us to be kind and to make those same kind of choices. And that's what I hear you saying, Daniel, when you talk about how you read his work. It's not just that, oh, you know, Fred Rogers was such a great man, but how can I follow his example?
I think the mistake that we make is believing that Fred Rogers is an answer rather than a continuation of the human conversation. And an effort, and his life's work was an effort to raise the level of human interaction and conversation. So one of the things that Mr. Rogers embodied was kindness. And I think the mistake that we make about kindness is we think that it is a state of being, that it occurs naturally or magically. And the truth is, kindness is discipline. Kindness is work. You have to constantly be thinking about the choices that you make. As we went into break, you played a portion of the song, What Do You Do With the Mad That You Feel? And what would we be like if we just all asked ourselves that when we were angry, even if we were cut off in traffic or someone had wronged us in some way? If we took the moment to think about whatever the emotion might be, anger, happiness, what have you, and said, how can we find the kindest solution to this problem that doesn't involve accessing primal anger and fear? And we have to remember, Mr. Rogers came to us in the late 60s and 70s. And as we in the present, they're hard to see past where we are. And we often don't respect where we've come from. The 70s and the 60s and the 70s were very tumultuous times, just like now. And we can't look backwards and say, well, Mr. Rogers would have saved us. He didn't save us then. We just have to listen. There's a great biography about Mr. Rogers called The Good Neighbor. And in the book, the author talks about how Mr. Rogers looked at Christ. And he often thought about Christ not as a supernatural figure, but as a human who was trying to pass along this incredible message of, you know, blessed are the merciful, for they shall be shown mercy. This sort of passion for respect and love of your fellow humans.
We were talking or listening earlier to What Do You Do With the Mad That You Feel? And Dan and Abby, I know that, of course, you guys work with kids all the time. Kids have such big emotions and they don't necessarily understand where they're coming from or, you know, what they mean. And that was something that Mr. Rogers helped them process. Of course, it's something that you guys try to help them process on your program as well. Abby, why don't you shed a little bit of light for us on that and thinking about those big emotions that kids are swayed by every day, sometimes before they're ready to deal with them.
Sure. Well, I always kind of think about kids like they're not so different from adults. I mean, it feels just as mad to a kid to feel mad as it does to a grown-up to feel mad. And some of the same strategies that adults use to manage that anger can be applied to kids, like breathing. So Dan created these awesome puppets called the Krabby Krabs, and they're usually either crabby or crabbier. And all they have to do is take 3 deep breaths, and they do that on the air, and kids can actually hopefully follow along and do that, you know, in their homes. And when I talk about the Krabby Krabs to kids when we're face-to-face, I always remind them, you know, hey, guess what? That works for kids, too. And guess what? That also works for grownups, too. And we have Happy Flower, who, you know, isn't always happy, but she's another one of our puppets. And when she's not happy, all she does is ask for a hug. And, you know, that works for kids and that works for grownups, too. So I think it's just a nice reminder to think, like, you know, it feels the same to a kid to be upset as it does to a grownup. And while the things that make us upset are different, those strategies can really play side by side.
I want to play a little bit more of Mr. Rogers' voice. There was kind of this backlash in the late 90s with people saying, oh, you know, Mr. Rogers ruined a whole generation of kids by telling each one of them that they were special. And, you know, everybody gets a trophy. Everybody's special. Now kids don't have to work hard for they don't think that they should work hard. There was you guys probably remember a lot of that chatter. And Mr. Rogers addressed that when he gave a commencement address at Dartmouth College in 2002. So that was just a year before he passed away. Let's listen to some of that commencement address.
And what that ultimately means, of course, is that you don't ever have to do anything sensational for people to love you. When I say it's you I like, I'm talking about that part of you that knows that life is far more than anything you can ever see or hear or touch. That deep part of you that allows you to stand for those things without which humankind cannot survive. Love that conquers hate. Peace that rises triumphant over war. And justice that proves more powerful than greed. So in all that you do, in all of your life, I wish you the strength and the grace to make those choices which will allow you and your neighbor to become the best of whoever you are. Congratulations to you all.
Again, just a little bit of the commencement address that Fred Rogers delivered at Dartmouth College in 2002. And, I mean, Dan, you probably remember when people were saying those things, and I think really intentionally misunderstanding what Mr. Rogers was saying. But it's such an incredibly powerful message to each and every child, because so many kids and so many adults really struggle with that sense of insecurity of what does make me special? Do I have anything to offer to the world?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that in the movie that we'll all watch this weekend, there's a really fascinating restaurant scene. And I've got some homework for all the listeners out there. If you go to YouTube, do a search for the 1997 Fred Rogers Lifetime Achievement Emmy Award. And, you know, he stands up there and is very thankful. And he says, thanks for everybody for being special. But he asks during the speech for everybody to take 10 seconds and think about how it wasn't just you that got yourself to the place that you are. It's all the people around you and all your friends and your family that helped build you up. And if you watch that clip and then watch the movie, again, the restaurant scene, I won't give it away, but there's a part in there where everything kind of becomes the audience's experience, not necessarily just what you're seeing on the screen. Tom Hanks brings everybody in and it becomes larger than life. And then you feel like, wait a second, talk about being special. The audience is now actually part of this movie. You're living this movie.
Yeah.
And it's super fascinating. It's great.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Daniel?
I apologize. I teared up a little bit when you played that clip. And the reason that I did is because so much of our dialogue as a culture is angry. And anger is born of fear. And that anger produces nothing but more anger and cruelty. And so the rejection of the idea that an individual is special simply because they are is a rejection of our very basic human dignity. And Mr. Rogers hated that. Mr. Rogers believed that no matter who you were, what you had done, what you didn't do, whatever you were or wherever you were special because you were in this world and there was no one else like you. And we don't hear messages like that anymore. We are so aggressive toward one another that we are constantly ranking everything, ranking our entertainment choices, ranking our places to eat, ranking each other, ranking people who play sports, whatever it might be. What if we were just to say, these are all, everyone is worthy of love, dignity, and respect?
I want to get to a couple other phone calls here. Shireen is on the line in Mount Vernon. Hi, Shireen.
Hi.
Hi, what's your story?
I grew up watching Mr. Rogers and just love him. And I just had a funny thing that when I was a senior in high school, I took AP Humanities. And whenever my teacher would show our class slides of different pieces of paintings of fine art, and she would ask us, okay, has anyone seen this painting before? Invariably, one of us would say, oh, Mr. Rogers had that on picture. And she would just get so frustrated, like, have none of you ever been to an art museum or seen any fine art outside of Mr. Rogers? And we're like, well, that's really how it was to fine art, was on picture. So, you know, we came to find out that what we were seeing on Mr. Rogers was George Trott's Sunday in the Park or Pete Mondrian's Broadway Boogie Woogie, but really the first time any of us were seeing fine art was on Mr. Rogers, on Picture.
Oh, Shireen, that's so great.
It's funny that all of us were seeing fine art through Mr. Rogers.
Absolutely. Shireen, thank you so much for your call. And of course, he introduced so much music on the show, too. I mean, we don't have a lot of time left, so we don't have a lot of time to talk about it. But I mean, he introduced a lot of kids to classical music and jazz, and I'm sure inspired many children. There are some more fun inspirations as well. Nick tweeted, he said, I remember Mr. Rogers wrapping a slice of cheese around a banana thanks to a viewer suggestion. suggestion. I ate many, many bananas with cheese as a kid after that. So he can inspire us in ways big and small. Pat is on the line in Muscatine. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I had an incident when I was tucking a child into bed. So we're talking well over 40 years ago. And we would do our prayers and maybe even sing a song. And one of the songs we sang was, "Give me oil in my lamp, keep me burning." And the end was, "Sing Hosanna to the King of Kings." And my four-year-old said, "Well, if Jesus is a king, does he wear a crown?" And I said, "I really don't know." Long pause. And he said, "Do you know Mr. Rogers' phone number?"
That's great. Well, and the thing is that if you'd had Mr. Rogers' phone number, he probably would have taken that call. That's what we're learning about him. We only have a couple of minutes left, and I want to give each of you an opportunity to really talk about Mr. Rogers' legacy. And in preparation for this show, I went and I saw the movie, but I was also reading a lot of articles. And I mentioned earlier the Tom Janot, his article in The Atlantic, and he said something in that article that I actually found really upsetting. And he said, "Mr. Rogers doesn't have successors." And I think he's absolutely 100% wrong, because I think about my life and the people that I know who practice radical kindness, and the list could go on and on and on. And maybe I can't think of one famous person who has that kind of pulpit that Mr. Rogers had, but I can think of so many people who really carry that forward, and maybe they were inspired by Mr. Rogers, or maybe they came to it another way, but I think he has so many successors. And I also think about how Generation Z, the youngest people right now, are the most tolerant generation yet. Acceptance and tolerance is one of their calling cards. They're being raised by Generation X. All of us are here, are members of Generation X. We're the first people who grew up with Mr. Rogers. So I can see his legacy in so many ways, but I'd love each of you to give me about 45 seconds of where you see Mr. Rogers' legacy taking us. And Dan, I'll let you go first.
You know, I think probably part of his legacy is that he believed in people, he believed in imagination, and that if you really truly believe in what you're living and where you're working and your families and your relationships, everybody else is all in too, and they also believe, and that's how you have hopefully successful relationships. So the guy believed, and hopefully today we all in this room and everybody out there listening believes in something to make their lives greater.
Abby?
Oh, you're absolutely right, Charity. There's so many people living kindness and teaching children and nourishing minds. When I'm not making TV with Dan, I'm out in the state of Iowa, and there, I'm telling you, there is an army of people out there working towards the mission that a healthy family grows a healthy child, and that a healthy child has to be, you know, healthy, and their mental health is important. And in order to be successful and in order to learn, that has to come first. And they're using Mr. Rogers' materials. They're using everything that, you know, PBS has to offer and every other resource has to offer. They're using it all, and they're working very, very hard and very diligently at it.
Dan Wardell and Abby Brown, thank you both so much.
Thanks, Charity.
Thank you so much, Charity.
Daniel Finney, we ran out of time, but I know that you have written quite a bit about Mr. Rogers and do your best to keep his philosophy alive. Daniel Finney, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Daniel Finney of the Des Moines Register. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.